how to cross a very narrow bridge and how not to be afraid. A class on Torah and psychology, and the teachings of Rabbi Nachman. There we go. So what I wanted to start with first is a very interesting Rambam. I forgot some of the English of it, but basically the Rambam talks about a very interesting case in Halacha. What happens? A person who goes in Pesach, and they go, and they're going to go bring their Korban Pesach. They go to Shechter Korban Pesach. This is a Shochet as a Pesach from Matzabal Mum or Trefa. Har is a Shochet Acher. Bechol Be'Shabbos. A Filu Mea Zeh Acher Zeh. Shochet V'Holech Achi Chasher. Echad O Achi Techashach V'Yidchel L'Sheni. Shehari Nenas. What happens? It's a very interesting halacha. Normally what you try to do a mitzvah, right? It's a mitzvah to bring Korban Pesach. It's coming up in a little less than 2 months of Pesach. And what you do, a person has to go bring their Korban, right? They have to go bring a Korban Pesach, that each family gets a Korban Pesach. Well, what happens if I go there, and you go and you shechter the Korban Pesach, and they check it, and it comes out that the Yotzei told the Korban Pesach was no good. So the Rambam says you can go and you can do it again. Yeah, and you could do it again, you could do it again, you could do it again, you could bring, he says, even 100 korbanos. And if each one comes out not good, right, and you're sitting there from the time you can bring it a little bit after midday till the sun sets, the sun setting in April, figure how long that is, it's about 6 or 7 hours. You're sitting in the Beis HaMikdash all day bringing animals, and every time you bring an animal, you find out that something's not good inside of the animal. There's no way to tell from the outside. But you keep going back. Can you imagine that the guy who's selling the sheep outside of the Beis HaMikdash, like, you again? Right? You again? And he comes back, and as he draws the last one, the sun is starting to set. The last one, they shecht it, right? And then they check the insides, and guess what? It's no good also. There's something wrong with the lungs, there's something wrong with the heart, whatever, something's wrong with the animal that makes it no good. So then the guy has to go home. He goes back to his family, he's waiting to start the Seder for him. They have no Korban Pesach for the Seder. And can you imagine how depressed this guy is? Right? So it's so sad. This guy tried and tried and tried. He was doing the right thing, and guess what? Can't bring the Korban Pesach. That year he cannot. But the halacha is that if it turns out that you mess up, something like this, if you're too far away, if you're Tameh, then you get what's called Pesach Sheni. Make annual Pesach Day. I had a friend whose family ran like several hotels worth of Pesach programs. So they said, we always celebrate Pesach Sheni. Because on Pesach night, we're too busy making sure that Mrs. Schwartz has her non-gebrach gefilte fish, and Mrs. Cohen has her gebrach matzah balls, and this one has their vegetables, and that one only has this, and running around all Pesach, we don't have time for Pesach either, so we also celebrate Pesach Sheni, the 14th day of the month of Iyar. Right? So they also celebrate Pesach Sheni, but so person is tamei. A person is far away, they get Pesach Sheni, they get a second chance. The Rambam says, well, what happens? That's okay, if you mess up. So you mess up, you get a second chance. What happens if you're there, you're doing the right thing, and it's just not going? You're doing the right thing. He was there, might have even been there early. He's there, he's doing the right thing, and you say, well, you know what? It must be that God's sending me a message at this point. It must be that the failure keeps happening, right? There's nothing he could do, like, short of x-raying the animals, which they didn't have at that time. Short of x-raying the animals, there's no way of him telling. And every single korban comes out treif, he could be hearing the goddess telling him, go take a hike, I don't want you. I don't want you. Go away. I don't like you. So what the halakha tells you is that even then the person gets Pesach Sheni, God says, look, I want you to understand. I want to see you. Keep trying. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but keep trying. Keep trying. Despite the fact that it looks like you're failing, keep trying. Right? That's what this halakha is saying. The halakha is telling us, even though it looks like a person's trying and trying and failing, keep trying. Right? Keep trying. Because I really do want that. I want you to keep trying. That's what it means, Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni, well, Baba Tristan will tell you, Pesach Sheni is nitada ken for fallen. Pesach Sheni means that it's never over. It's not, you should never give up. Sounds very Breslov, right? I'm going to get to that in a moment. Pesach Sheni means you don't give up. It's never for fun. It's never time to lose hope. So, famously, you know, you probably all know this song, Kolam Kulo, Gesher Tzar Meod. I thought about playing it. Ve'hayikar Lo Lifached Klal. Right? The famous song. I believe it was actually written by the Boston Rebbe, at least that's what he told me, for a band called the Ruach Revival in the 1970s, 1980s. They made up what would eventually become Schlock Rock. They were the MCSY band. The parts of Ruach Revival went into Schlock Rock, a little bit of Jewish music history, if I'm not mistaken. But initially, this song, Kolam Kulo Gesher Tzar Meod, Ve'yikar Lo Lifached Klal. It's famous, everyone, Ve'yikar, it's very, you know, the crescendo of the song, it's very, very moving. Now, done, and don't give up. Don't be afraid. Lo Lifached Klal. So, this teaching from Rabbi Nachman, Torah Mem Ches, in the second volume, is all about it's the teaching that line is pulled from. But there's a surprise ending, by the way, a very big surprise ending that we'll get to shortly, where he actually says this line. So Rabbi Nachman writes, or Rabbi Nelson writes, when a person begins to serve Hashem, the way that they show him is rejection. It seems to me he's being rebuffed on high, and they are altogether preventing him from entering into the service of Hashem. In reality, the distance is nothing but being brought near. That all the distance, all the failure, like our halacha in Korban Pesach, right? That halacha, that you think that you're losing, but really this is what it's all about. This is what the Avodas Hashem is all about. Even when I'm failing, it looks like I'm failing, it looks like God doesn't want me. No. That being seems to be being pushed away, that you're really being brought closer. It says, surely concerning this, in matters like this, one needs great encouragement. A person has to encourage themselves very, very much and pay no attention to whatever this is. In truth, all that this thing is nothing but being brought near. And all the affirmation happens to all the tzaddikim. Right? This is an explosion. All the tzaddikim has happened to. We hear it explicitly from their mouths. So Rabbi Nachman says this. Do you know who Rabbi Nachman's great-grandfather was?
Baal Shem Tov.
The Baal Shem Tov, right? He's saying, all the tzaddikim told me this. All the tzaddikim, he means the mishpacha, the tzaddikim, that tzaddikim told me this, literally. All the big guns told me that you think that people are just born like that? You think all the big people are born like that? Most of the big people are not born like that. Most of the people who ever achieve anything, if some people, a small slice of people with natural talent, most people in the world, in order to achieve what they achieve, it's a lot more blood, sweat, and tears. There's a deodorant commercial that success is 7% little percent inspiration and like 90% perspiration. Because that's what it's about. It's about the work. The Rav Putner wrote in one letter that he said, I don't like this new thing. There are these like biography books about these rabbis, right? These biography books of these rabbis that... These biography books about these rabbis, because you have this book about the Chafetz Chaim, and you assume that people only look at the Chafetz Chaim when he's 100 or whatever years old and say, oh, this is the Chafetz Chaim. You don't know all the struggles that he fought to become that person. Or like you can imagine a duck. There's I recall somebody using the duck as an analogy. A duck when he's sitting on the river, the duck. It looks like very, very calm and placid, like he's floating on top. But really, their feet are like flying all over the place as he's like making himself go. Right? You only see what's going on the top level. There's a picture of an iceberg, also the same thing. You only see the tip of the iceberg. You don't see what's going on underneath. You never see what's going on underneath. So similarly, he said, it seemed like God was not paying attention or turning from their direction because that despite spending so much time, they still felt very, very distant. That's an amazing, amazing thing, because we think that if I'm supposed to be successful, it's just supposed to fall into my lap. And Rabbi Nachman is saying, nothing can be further from the truth. Well, American society, on one hand, the whole idea is valuing hard work. At the same time, we like so much more about the child prodigies, and it's like, own the area. Most people are not child prodigies. Most people, they're people who put in their work. You want to play piano? how to work it. You want to play guitar? Yeah, you don't have people who are just so talented from their little virtuosos. Everything and anything is no. An individual can already be the entrance to holiness. You're already almost there, and you turn back on account of the aforementioned confusion. Alternatively, he gets very close, the other side revolves him. May the Holy One rest upon his stress, and does not allow him to the entrance. On account of he turns back, because this is the way of the other side. When he sees the person is very close, he sees he's about to make it, he launches a powerful assault. According to the lead person, he's great encouragement in order to counter. So every time where you feel like you're giving up, you feel like you're about to let go, you feel like you're about to drop it, it's really at that moment you're on the cusp of something huge. You're on the cusp of something huge. But we know there's a rule, because I'll bring this, that's called it's similar to, of course, you know, like the Force in Star Wars. There's the dark side and light side, and there's always the balance of the Force. No matter how powerful you're always bringing balance to the Force. Or, Mishli puts it, Gam Zelu Matzah Elohim. That Kadosh Baruch Hu makes everything, for every, or spiritual inertia for that matter, for every action in holiness, there's an equal and opposite reaction on the other side. Everything good has to be totally balanced. That's why we lost Nevu at the same time we lost the urge for idol worship. Not just who wants to do idol worship.
Yeah.
A lot of other things out there. Idol worship, not in the top 10 anymore.
I mean, not for the Israelis who finish the army.
Even then, it's cool. They're looking for spirituality. It's not necessarily idol worship. They're looking for meditation. They're looking for something deep. The idea is that what they're missing, what they're longing for, the prophetic element is not there either, because it's got to be an equal fight. It's got to be an equal fight. So, as soon as you're on the cusp, you're at the doorway of being able to reach anything, that's when it's the hardest. That's when it's the hardest. And such, with the Nachman story, the lost princess, like the lost princess, it's funny that every Disney movie ever always is about a lost princess. My Rebbe says that's just us hearing really the truth of Rebbe Nachman's stories is the truth of what Kabbalah talks about the divine presence in exile, the lost princess. That Rebbe Nachman's story of the lost princess, the missing princess, is all about the guy who's searching for the lost princess keeps like he's just about to find her and then he falls asleep again. A little bit Alice in Wonderland, then a little bit Cinderella at the same time, because he goes looking for the lost princess, he's about to find her, and then he sees a jar that says "eat me," and he eats it, and he falls asleep. Right? Or he sees a stream of wine, and he drinks it, and he falls asleep. This happens over and over again. And it's funny, the story ends that it doesn't tell us how. It says in the end, the guy who's looking for the lost princess ultimately finds her. For sure he does, but I'm not going to tell you that. I was like, what? Rabbi, that's not how you write a story. And the answer is, one of the answers is because it's different in each person's life for how they find the missing princess. And what the missing princess means to all of us is meaning. It is a personal ge'ula. For the Jewish people, it's a national ge'ula. It's a divine presence in my life. It's a very, very deep story. You can learn it over and over and over again, the missing princess. And you hear it also in the same way over here in this Torah. Was one of my favorite pieces of this favorite teaching. My favorite teachings of this teaching. He said, we heard from a true tzaddik who said, had anyone who, no matter whom, told me when I first began serving Hashem, brother, be strong and hold on. Like Dr. Benji, right? Be strong and hold on. I would have run in the very quick in serving God. But that tzaddik too experienced all the aforementioned, did not hear any encouragement from anybody. Do you understand what that means? Where Freifel talks about this a lot, the Yavalt, he talks about this, that where he says that you don't understand that with your have a good day, you can do it. To your friend, just to say, keep at it, hold on, you can do this, I believe in you, is the most tremendous, tremendous thing you can say to anybody. It's a nice long shmoo that I encourage all of you to read it. In the safe, if you want, I'll take a picture and give it to anyone who wants. But he says this and explains this whole Gemara, where Kadosh Baruch Hu is putting letters on tops of crowns on tops of letters, and he says to Moshe, Moshe, you should have helped me. And Moshe's like, you're God, what do you need my help for? And then God's like, yeah, we should, you should have said that you should have atzlacha. Because... The Freifeld explains, because a person like has closed kochos. A person feels like they can't accomplish it. And someone comes over to you and says you can do it, I believe in you. Now, hold on, as you said, brother, be strong and hold on. Chazak v'amatz. Brother, be on, you can do it. You could be a billion times that person. So then Freifeld says parenthetically, I sit with my friends, and they look at me and I look at them. Don't they know that I need to hear this? Freifeld was already the Rosh Hashiva of a larger yeshiva in Far Rockaway at that point, with many, many Talmidim, and families of grown Talmidim with children, right, already at that point. They said, don't they know that I need it? Can't they hear that I need to hear this too? And his friends, by the way, you know, other Rosh Yeshiva of that tikkufa, of that time period, his friends, Ravard Schechter, Revelia Weintraub, I sit around with my friends, don't they see that I need that? Don't they see that I need the encouragement? We all need to say to each other, you know, brother, be strong, hold on, chazak v'amatz, you can do this. You can do this. You don't understand the power that we have to empower each other. Says he would this tzaddik, one of the tzaddiki I said, if somebody would have told me when I was younger at this point, that I would be so many times the person I am now. You know what that means? You understand, we really truly don't understand how we can open a person up with a big warning, but then you can do it.
Yeah.
And here we go. Here it comes. Vida sha'adam tzarich la'avor al gesher tzar me'od me'od. Da klav yekar shelo yitpached klav. A little bit different than the song, but artistic license, right? He says, know that the person needs to cross the bridge, which is very, very narrow. Haklal, the rule, the yikar, and this is the main point of everything, shalo yit pached klal, that you should not
be afraid.
No, what is it really? Yit pached, reflexive tense? Don't scare yourself, right? Don't be afraid is how we translate. Don't scare yourself. Don't scare yourself. That's a fantastic, fantastic teaching. Even more than don't be afraid. What do you mean don't tell me don't be afraid? And scary. Well, yeah, I shouldn't be afraid.
It's really not scary when you're scary. That's the distinction.
Scaring yourself.
Coming into the next piece. Don't scare yourself. Don't work yourself up. Don't let yourself talk yourself up into fear. Right? We can make ourselves feel, and this is one of the whole points of Mindful Mondays. Part of our minds and our hearts also depend on, Shirlo's analogy that I give, how you face the camera on your phone. What do you choose to focus on? What are the thoughts that I choose to think? The thoughts that will occur naturally. They're thoughts that pop up, because that's the nature of our minds and our perception and our cognition. In our world, how we see it, it's natural and normal to feel and to think certain things. That's the way we work, you know? But what the thoughts we pay attention to, that we repeat on, that we harp on, versus the ones that we just notice and let go. Marshall Linehan, one of the big names in cognitive behavioral therapy, she pioneered her own concept called dialectical behavioral therapy, which is a lot of ideas, and they all very much line up with some, have some awesome shiurim on them. But the point I want to bring to you right now is the understanding three states of mind that we have: rational mind, emotional mind, and wise mind. Right? This is one way to understand how we think. One, as we call paradigm. First, the rational mind. The rational mind, it's like the computer, it approaches everything intellectually. It thinks logically, uses past experience, uses facts, research, and planning, and is focused. I come in, I know exactly how things are going to go. I walk into class, professor there, he's telling me, okay, the project's due here, test is over there. I need to do X, Y, and Z. On the total other side of the plane is the emotional mind. The emotional mind finds reason, logic, all thinking is difficult. Why? Because I'm keying into certain more base emotional states going on over here. I'm feeling danger. I'm feeling pain. I'm feeling fear. Right? I use only emotions to make decisions. It's reactive. It tells us how we're doing. It uses core psychological needs. Right? It touches in on those concepts of the fears and hopes that a person has inside of themselves. The fears and the hopes, oh no, things are going wrong, things are not going right, I'm afraid this is happening, I'm afraid that's happening, the hopes are not materializing, that's the emotional mind. But I have the rational mind, addresses things very, very clearly, sums things up, okay, I need to study for this test. The emotional mind is, oh my God, if I don't study for this test, I'm going to be a barista for the rest of my life. Right? The wise mind says, okay, I need to study for this test. It's important that I should succeed in order to move forward with the next stage in education. The rational mind is, my life is over. Right? Now, both of these are important in their own place. I need the rational mind. I need the emotional mind also. I need to know how I'm feeling. If I'm feeling one way and thinking another way, I'm being pulled in two different directions. But if one is running away with the other, then things are disordered. So then the wise mind is in the middle. It uses intuitive thinking. It balances between rational and emotional. And, of course, living mindfully, right? That key right over there. Big proponents of that. Of noticing your feelings. You're not ignoring your psychological needs. You're not trying to push on regardless of what I'm feeling. You're recognizing it. You're understanding. You're understanding your inner world. A person uses their reasonable mind when they approach a situation intellectually. They plan to make decisions. The wise mind finds the balance between reasonable and emotional halves. They're able to recognize and respect their feelings while responding in a rational manner. The emotional mind is used when their feelings control their thoughts. This is what causes to act impulsively without little regard for consequences. Right? When I act out of sheer fear, oh my God, I'm going to be a barista for the rest of my life. Right? Now, of course, if that's what you want to do, it's great. I mean, we're assuming that that's not what you want to do. Right? We're assuming that you have other plans. Again, we're not throwing shade at anyone's direction. We're just understanding. Great. I'm going to be a failure. I'm going to disappoint everybody. Right? Those type of feelings. And they sort of overwhelm you. They take you over. That's the emotional mind. Rabbi Nachman says, Lo yispached klal. Lo yispached klal. Don't scare yourself. Don't engage, I'll be with you in a second, Ariel. Don't let yourself fall into an emotional mind where you start to work yourself up. Right? Don't work it, say, in the case of the early parts of the Torah, he's saying a person looks, sees a Kadosh Baruch Hu who is seemingly distant from him, must be that God doesn't love me anymore. I'm davening, I'm not being answered, God hates me. It must be because I'm X, Y, or Z. It must be because, but so this distance must be because there's something wrong with me. I'm fundamentally flawed. I'm unlovable. People say this all the time. Sometimes we say it publicly, and sometimes we say it in our heads. The intellectual mind, or the rational mind, the wise mind in the middle says, yes, you feel distant. Yes, but what could Rabbi Nachman just taught us? Okay, this distance is really a roundabout way of bringing us closer still. He's not being distant to be distant. It's being distant on the condition to draw closer. It's a very, very different literature. It's a very different place of turning around. Lo yipachei kal, don't scare yourself. Don't let your emotional mind run away with the show. The time is to balance it out.
Yeah, sorry, you had a question.
So does our emotional world give us the ability to experience satisfaction in ways that the rational mind doesn't? And are there different Torah approaches to that, or is it like a unanimous idea?
So what you can say is that that's where the wise mind would come in, or what we call it das in the sphere of das, right? Or the sphere of das in yisod, where you're modulating between the two. Tiferes also in a sphere concept.
So, like, where exactly does the emotional aspect of our personality come into play, like, in our daily lives?
So, are we talking the Linehan model, or which model are we talking about?
I'm not sure.
So, one model, one way of perceiving it using the Linehan model, the wise mind, where the emotions are there, you experience them, but they don't overwhelm. You notice them, you experience them, you experience them without judging them, you live in them, but you don't let them, like, sell the house, as it were. right? You don't give up the ship. In fact, there's a, for those who want to get a little more technical for a moment, there's a chapter in the Piazetzna's Chovas HaTalmidim at the end, where he explains that as Freud referred to the dreams as the royal road to the unconscious. So the Piazetzna refers to the emotions as the royal road to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? But he says that the emotions and the feelings, through them, you go up through following the trail of the emotion back to HaKadosh Baruch
Hu. Well, it seems like it's not the case. We see, it seems that we have to not dismiss our emotions, we have to acknowledge our emotions, but not to act on them. So it seems the opposite.
Well, not act at them, but to modulate. Not to let them overwhelm. Right? To notice them, to use them, to understand them, to be with them, but not to let them drive all the time. To give directions, but not to drive. You know, sitting a shotgun with ways.
Right. Is there a way to like use emotions to make your life better?
Yes, absolutely. So the Piazetzna has evocative visualizations where you use that also, but your hand is on the brake, as it were, but being able to use it properly. But absolutely. Absolutely. So, just to tie up, so I hope, this little opening, Rabbi Nachman said that all of his teachings are introductions. All of his teachings are introductions to Hakdamot, the Hakdamas, the introductions to different concepts. This is the beginning of a gateway to tell me to start to understand all of my, the distances and closeness, right, as being drawn close. The need to be mechazik yourself, be mechazik your friends, to be mechazik to your friends. And finally, the idea of lo yit pached klal, not to scare yourself, to realize that when I'm working myself up about something, and to be able to recognize and say, oh, I recognize this feeling. I'm scared, and I own that scaredness, but I'm not letting it drive. Lo yit pached klal, not let yourself get so worked up about the distance that you fall apart entirely. May we merit to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with b'chol levavenu, all of our hearts, all of our souls, and may we merit very, very soon to see the time that we made it. Thank you so much for coming. Please, everybody, bench, and then please, let's all go in and stuff some envelopes. It'll make everything go a lot faster and a lot healthier for all of us.